Welcome to Coaching Culture, the podcast where we discuss how we can use sports and not let them use us. I'm JP Nurbin, the founder of Thrive On Challenge, and the mission for this podcast is to connect leaders in athletics to help us create a transformational culture by building leadership and character. Now let's get started. Hi, welcome to episode 48 of Coaching Culture, the Coaching Manifesto. I'm your co-host, JP Nurbin. Yes, you heard that correctly. Co-host, I'm excited to be welcoming Nate Sanderson, who was a former guest on this podcast, and he will now be joining us as the co-host. Now, while there are many reasons I'm bringing Nate onto the podcast, the reasons you might care to know is that Nate is exceptional at building culture, the right culture, the culture that we talk about on this podcast. And he's been on both ends of the spectrum. You know, he's coached state championship programs as well as losing programs. And he is actually raising the bar when it comes to this podcast, not just with his diverse experiences, but he really does challenge me and some of the ideas that I look to present. Now, in our first episode today, we're going to be discussing the importance of asking, who am I, when it comes to coaching. This episode is really setting the stage for a series we're going to be doing on an internalized process of reflecting on our coaching. For me, I use the phrase building a coaching manifesto, which is this internal process of clarifying our purpose, our values, our principles, our strategies, and our behaviors. So who are we as a coach? Along with some of the principles, these episodes will give you some activities and questions to reflect on. So at the end, you will have formally or informally answered that question, who am I? So let's get started.
JP, this week I want to start off this episode by telling two stories, and I'm curious to hear your response to them. We're going to talk about two relatively famous and successful football coaches. They both had very interesting experiences in the middle of their career. So in a book called The Education of a Coach, about Bill Belichick's coaching career, his playing career in high school and in college, and then on into his professional coaching career, he talks about the transition that he experienced after the debacle in Cleveland, when he got fired and the team got moved to Baltimore, and taking his current job in New England, where obviously he's become one of the most successful coaches in the history of the league. And one of the things that he encountered in that time in between was this sense of, when I was in Cleveland, I wasn't my own man. That there were ways that he wanted to do things, there were things that he thought that he should have done that he didn't, because he didn't feel this freedom to be able to act on who he thought he was. And one of the best stories in this book is about how they recruited free agents in Cleveland, where they would take them, they'd fly them in first class, and they'd pick them up in a limousine, and they'd take them to the steakhouse, and they'd have them throw out the first pitch of the Indians game, and they'd treat them like they were kings. And then when they signed, they coached them like they were dogs, right? And Scott Pioli has this line where he tells Belichick, when they get to New England, why wine and dine them at fancy places when we're really meat and potatoes? And from that point on, Belichick, you know, said, we're not doing it that way anymore. You know, we're going to tell guys we love football here. We spend 24 hours a day playing football, studying football, and that's what we're about. And that became part of the do your job mantra going forward in New England. But I don't know if that ever would have happened if he didn't have this moment of crisis in the middle of his career. And Pete Carroll has a similar story in his book, Win Forever, when he kind of flamed out after being the coach in New England and at the New York Jets. And he took a year off where he didn't coach at all. And he just reflected. He just thought back on his coaching career, his playing career, trying to figure out where did he go wrong and who was he really as a person and as a coach. He did a lot of writing in that time, which ended up becoming this book. But one of the things that he talks about after that year off, he interviewed at USC and obviously he became successful there before going to the Seahawks. But after that interview and after going through this process of trying to figure out who he was and what his values were and if he got one more shot, who would he really want to be as a coach, he said this. He said, I knew after the interview I had just presented who I was as a person and a football coach in a comprehensive and completely authentic way for the first time in my life. And he goes on the rest of the book to really tie in his future success to coming to this place in his career where he felt like he understood himself. And so as we start into our discussion this week, I'm curious for you, have you experienced something like that in your own coaching experience where you've had to come face to face with who is JP Nurbin?
Absolutely. And it's funny. I don't know if we can avoid some deep struggle, some deep challenge before we actually start to ask that question. I was coaching in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I was kind of moving towards kind of a low point when it came to my enjoyment and my fulfillment. And I was actually starting to really consider leaving coaching. And coaching, I really felt, was my passion. I had changed my life around. I dropped out of law school years before to pursue a teaching degree so I could, you know, coach full time. And I'm coaching down in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I'm getting ready to take my basketball team to a tournament, a Christmas tournament in Florida. And this news breaks that was local news, but also national news, where a high school basketball team was on a trip similar to what we were about to be taking, and they had rented a house in the mountains of their Tennessee for a tournament, and they had an incident where three seniors or upperclassmen sodomized one of the freshman athletes. And it was this horrifying thing that happened, and you kind of caused everybody to step back and reflect. But as the news kind of broke, I saw a lot of people start to point blame at those coaches and really try to find somebody to hold responsible for that. And a couple of things kind of went through my mind. Is one is that, you know, those coaches weren't the sole, they weren't solely responsible. Like, as a sporting culture, the way that we're coaching, the way that we're teaching kids, the things that we're emphasizing in sports are also responsible. Kids don't get to that stage in one season. It was seasons before. It was the way they were raised in sports that kind of put them into that position. And so I also started to reflect on, all right, not only is this evident in our sporting culture, but who am I as a part of that? Am I someone that's just sitting back and complacent? Am I going with all these type of behaviors, these coaching behaviors? Am I all part of this culture that I'm so critical of at that moment? And I started to realize I was. And when you start getting into coaching, it's very easy to fall into the habits and the behaviors that and doing things like everybody expects you to do them, right? Like you're expected to coach. And so I started to really reflect on, you know, why am I coaching? What do I value? What do I want to do in coaching? And then as I started to ask those questions, it really sent me down this rabbit hole of going, okay, well, this is why I'm coaching. This is what I value. But do my behaviors match up with that? And I started to realize that they largely didn't. And so as I started to try to think about retraining the way I operated as a coach, I realized, like Joe Ehrman says in his book, Inside Out Coaching, if you want to become a better coach, you have to become a better you.
That statement from Joe Ehrman is such a powerful one, because it really gets to the core of what's necessary, I think, in order to not only have a better experience in coaching or whatever it is that you're doing in your life, but also to become more effective. You know, often we think about being a better coach and we think, I got to get better tactics. I need a better press break. I need a better strategy. I need a better coaching staff. I need better players. And really, there's a lot that's under our control in going through this process. And what we would, our hope would be going into the next few weeks, is that it wouldn't be something that you're confronted with because of a traumatic event that's happened, but that we could be more intentional about asking this question of, who do I want to be and how do I become a better coach to be more effective with my players, to be more effective in what I'm doing. And I just love that Coach Ehrman starts with you, right? It starts with me figuring out how to become a better me.
Yeah, and for me, initially, I felt like building culture, like building character, living out my why, I felt like, you know, that was a very outwardly process. I felt it was about classroom sessions and talking to them about that. And yes, there's an outward process, but it really starts inward. And so looking inward and reflecting on my behaviors, and you touched on it there, we want new procedures. We want new strategies to build our culture, to build character, to get these outcomes that we're looking for, whether they're about winning or they're also even about building character and building people that are good citizens and that they feel loved and all that. To do this effectively, we need to first reflect on who we are as a coach and how we're operating.
Well, JP, you and I both have a background in teaching, in education. I taught for 12 years, middle school and high school, social studies, and I'm sure if your experience was anything like mine, you endured a number of long hours and long days of service meetings, learning about the latest, trends and programs and strategies that can be used in the classroom. But as you think back to being an effective educator, a lot of those things were things that you put on the outside. There are different ways of communicating, to better teach a topic or to better engage students. But it was strategies like you're talking about, rather than looking inward and trying to figure out, how do I become better as a person? How do I connect better with my students? How do I create a better classroom environment, not only where students can feel safe to be who they are and explore who they want to be, but for me personally as a teacher, as a person, to create an environment that brings out the best in me. One of the things that's really challenged me through this process is a book by Donald Miller called Scary Close. And in that book, he really identifies, one of the most valuable reasons, I think, to go through this process, which is that the more we're able to know ourselves, the better we're able to be known by others. And his book is sort of the story of his courtship of his now wife, Betsy, but the internal process that he had to go through, because he realized that he had so many masks and he portrayed himself almost as an actor to so many people that he didn't really know who he was when she really wanted to know who he was to kind of establish that connection. And as I thought about that, not necessarily in the context of romantic relationships, but as a coach in a coaching context, it's so much more empowering for us to be able to know others when we know who we are and are able to share that with those in our programs, whether it's our players, our assistant coaches, even the parents in our program. There's a certain amount of power in being vulnerable and being able to share from who we are and who we want to be in that process.
So for me, Nate, my lowest point in coaching wasn't when we had the really horrible record, we were losing lots of games. It was when my relationships with my players were really strained. And I look back at my most, my highlights of coaching. It's when my players came to my wedding. It's when I was invited to their home to have dinner with their family. And so I really started to ask the question, what did I want my legacy to be as a coach? What did I want those defining moments to be for me? And so as I started to reflect on that, I realized that I had spent the majority of my time trying to fix kids and change kids. And really, honestly, that wasn't working, whether it was through team activities or just the way that I operated. And I had to start reflecting back on, what could I do? What could I change in the way that I coached to build and nurture those relationships? Like, I don't think my why in coaching changed that much. I don't think my values changed that much, but my behaviors had to change. And if I wasn't changing the way I operated, then things weren't going to change. And John Miller in The Question Behind the Question book, and he always asks this great question of people: what is the number one thing that you can do to change your culture, to change your team, to improve your culture? And the answer is very simple. It's you. It's change yourself. That's the only thing you can do is to focus on your own personal growth and the way that you operate.
Well, JP, I'm curious, as you started going down this road of being more intentional about your behaviors and how you interacted with your players, did that change how coaching felt to you? I mean, did it become a more rewarding experience, maybe regardless of your outcomes, but because your relationships started to grow and be better with your players?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think for me, and I talked about that low point, and as I started to reflect on who I was as a coach, started to work on myself and model that growth mindset, not just when it comes to how I teach the game or the X's and O's, but model that growth mindset as how I operate as a person and started to be vulnerable with players, my relationships just took off again. And I found this new sense of fulfillment when it came to coaching that I had kind of missed out on. And I know I experienced that early on in my career. I think I was drawn to coaching basketball early on because I loved the sport and I loved connecting with players, right? I liked building those relationships. But somewhere along the line, and you talk about this a little bit earlier, somewhere along the line, the culture around me was so much about winning and so much about you know, protecting that identity of becoming that great coach in the mind of so many of people on the outside, that I lost myself. And so by going and reflecting inwardly and starting to grow as a person and as a coach, and it started to transform those relationships. I mean, that was a game changer for me.
It's interesting you use that phrase, I lost myself, because sometimes when we get in that place, and this isn't just in coaching, but, you know, we start to do things that we wouldn't normally do, or we do things that wouldn't be true to our values if we're really going to sit down and make conscious decisions about our behaviors. And sometimes that just feels like a little bit of chipping away. You know, it isn't always lead to some sort of dramatic look yourself in the mirror midlife crisis moment where you're going to make a profound decision about being true to yourself or continuing down this other path. And I think one of the things that I hope to be able to share with coaches as we go forward here is maybe how to be a little bit more sensitive to those moments that do chip away at how you feel about yourself and whether or not you're really acting in a way that, you know, you would want to in your perfect setting when you imagine yourself as being your best. And I think about a book called The Courage to Teach. And there's a quote in this book that uses this phrase, when you're doing things that don't align with who you are, that it does violence to the self or violence to the soul. And I think figuring out how to start to recognize those places where you know, you're doing things that just don't seem true to you. And that could be in lots of different contexts, whether it's relationships with players. Even in my context, it's even the system that we're running as a team. If it doesn't manifest sharing the basketball and caring for each other and creating for each other. I mean, those are things that we teach on a daily basis because it's part of the core of who I am. And when I see, you know, habits that are different than that, I just feel it in my heart when I see the game being played a different way. And much of my challenge is how do I take what I know to be true about me in terms of wanting to serve others and even our style of play. And that can be it sounds like a daunting challenge in a way, but that's a lot of what we want to try to do here in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. And this inside process, I mean, it's going to start with us asking, why do we coach? We're going to get into what are our values as a coach? But we're not really going to spend a lot of time going into some different, I guess you'd call like team strategies and different procedures that you can start to implement with your team. It's more going to be about reflecting on aligning behaviors with our principles and our values. And near the end of it, we're going to kind of talk about some various disciplines that we can implement within our life that can help us to retrain these type of things and move us back to a place where we have that alignment with who we truly are as a person. And we can align that authentic self with our coaching self. And so, like you said earlier, not wearing these masks as a coach.
And one of the fun things I think about this process is that there certainly is some individual reflection that goes on. I mean, you have to spend a little bit of time really thinking about some deep questions that we're going to get into. But one of the things that'll be, I hope, a little bit unique about our process is that we really want to draw others into that along with you. So it isn't just you reflecting, but we will provide ways that you can engage with your assistant coaches. You can engage with your current and former players. You could even engage with some of your parents or administrators in starting to go down this path and to gain different perspectives on who are you as a coach? How do they see your values manifesting in what you're doing? And to be able to do that in a collaborative effort rather than just some sort of isolated experience all by yourself alone in a closet with a candle and some incense.
Yeah, and this can be for some people a little bit more formal of a process, you know, which for me it takes shape, you know, as you're creating this formal document. And for some people it's a lot more, like yourself, it's a little bit more informal, right?
For sure. Yep. I'm not nearly as organized as you are, and I don't write a lot of stuff down, but there are certainly things that I have latched onto that, you know, help to be able to guide and ground me as we're going through our coaching experience.
That's it for this episode of the Coaching Culture Podcast. Be sure to follow Nate on Twitter. His handle is @CoachNAnderson. You can also email him at Sanderson_N@BreakthroughBasketball.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to my weekly newsletter at ThriveOnChallenge.com, because as we move through this series, I'm going to be sending out the podcast coaching notes every week. And these will include the internal reflection activities we're suggesting in these episodes. Also in this newsletter, you get other links to articles and tools to help you build your culture. All right, that's it for today. Thanks again for listening in.